we are continuing our State of Addiction, a special three-hour focus. Eric Eckberg, Granite Recovery Center, CEO, and one of the great commanders in this area. His folks checking in with us. John Delena, the DEA. Josh McKelvin, I'm still, as we go to Joe and Ware, and Eric, I'm still getting over John's announcement this morning. He's in New York, national news, just through the DEA's efforts. And as Josh, you put out, this is only what they got. Mm-hmm. In the last year, 36 million deadly doses of fentanyl taken off the streets. 36 million. That's only what they got.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, 4 in 10 are definitely deadly doses, according to John Delena. Your odds are better playing Russian roulette than they are buying a pill on the streets.
And he said there's no safe pill to get in the street if you're addicted. There's no safe pill to get on the internet. Joe and Ware, good morning. GMI Studios, one of our listeners. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
All right, thanks.
Good, Joe. Good morning.
Yeah, so this state of addiction, it really hits home with me because, Jack, I think you're I think you're familiar with the fact that I did work for the Purdue Pharma Company for 10 years in this area. And when I think about what had happened to some of the people that had unfortunately taken, you know, the long-acting opioid, it sends, you know, chills up my spine. And some nights I can't sleep. I mean, I didn't do it intentionally. But I think after, you know, seeing what has happened to people, not just in the state of New Hampshire, but all over, it's a tragedy, and it does haunt me sometimes.
Well, thank you for that honesty.
But I also will say that couldn't we have done a better job at the border with all this fentanyl coming over?
Well, we still can. We still can and should, Joe. I mean, earlier, when John Delena talked about the two cartels right now, I can't remember the names, but he said there are two. He said it three times. Like, there's two cartels right now out of Mexico that are taking advantage of this. And the good thing I'm our president, because I'd be convening my team right now, and I'd be looking at Rangers, Special Ops. I'd be putting a team together. I'm going to go down and take out these labs. And, by the way, I wouldn't be calling the Mexican president for permission. I'd be calling to tell him that we're doing this as we speak. But that's, you know, I'm our president, but...
Almost. I mean, you sound presidential. But before you cut me loose, Jack, and I know I think there's a gentleman on with you right now. Why so many IRS agents, and why did we have a vote against?
Well, we're not going to get into politics, Joe. But listen, we're going to let you go.
No, I'm not going on politics. But I'm saying, just shouldn't we have strengthened when we had the opportunity? Shouldn't we have done that?
Well, we're going to get back to it, but Joe, thank you, and thank you for talking about your past in terms of the pharma stuff. But, you know, it's timely, Eric, because when you look at how people get addicted, and I want you to speak to this, Eric, and why some people get addicted and why some don't. I don't think that's an easy answer to make, and I think we need to remove stigmas and judgments and realize any one of us could get addicted, and any family of ours could be impacted. And I also want to touch upon in this hour the combination too often, or more often than not, where there's a mental health component, where, as you said once to me, offline or online, Eric, it's like the chicken and the egg. I don't know if mental health can lead to addiction or addiction can lead to mental health, but I know sometimes they're wed. Can you speak to that?
I can certainly try. Why some people become or addicted or fall into that category of substance abuse disorder is a mystery. We do know in this country about 10% of our population will fall in that category. Why the other 90% don't? I don't know. I think, and quite frankly, maybe it doesn't matter. It's more important that the 10% that do figure it out and get help and get treatment and recover. People come to us, and when I say the chicken or the egg, we know there's probably some underlying mental health issue going on. In most cases, it's mild anxiety, depression. People start most of the time in the early teen years, you know, having a few drinks that escalate, smoking pot with their friends, peer pressure, et cetera. And when it works for that person, they find relief, they feel more normal, they fit in, and they continue to use. It works, right? If something works, we repeat it. So they repeat it, And lo and behold, it progresses. They need more of that same substance to get the same effect. And lo and behold, that's when the dysfunction creeps in, the consequences creep in, and all of a sudden there's problems. And now we have problems with the family, with school,
right,
et cetera.
Josh and Eric, I want to kind of, before we hear from one of your folks, experts on the treatment side, I want to share with you one story without sharing the name of the family, but it's two families in my life that I know very well. And the same story, ironically, they live in one in Maine, one in New Hampshire. The same story, Eric. And maybe you can speak to this, Eric, I mean, Josh, and you can respond. And that is this. They have sons who are in their mid to upper 20s now, probably been battling some form of addiction now for more than 5 years, but it's been an evolutionary, gradual thing. So there may have been bad incidents along the way, but things calm down, so no one thinks there's a problem. And then they find out that their loved ones, once they finally got into some treatment, have a mental health issue. So they might have started off self-medicating with, for example, taking a lot of marijuana and not the medication that the doctor said they need for a mental health disorder. And it could have been, in different cases, schizophrenia, bipolar, but the definite mental health where they should be on some meds because they can't handle the ups and downs, okay? But what I've heard from these parents is the kids don't want to stay in the meds, or they fall off the meds. Then they start hanging around with the wrong people again, and they fall right back into addiction. It's a spiral that keeps going around. And the parents have struggled on, do we force our loved one into treatment? Do we let them get there on their own? What do we do? What did we do wrong? That emotional pressure on the family. They worry about their kid, as any parent should. They love their kid, and that's where they're at. Can you? Is that a common thing you hear when the people touch base with Granite Recovery?
Yes. Especially, what do parents do to force loved ones or spouses to force people into treatment? Right. Treatment works much better if the person coming in wants it. They've recognized it. They know that they got to do something, not if they're forced.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does work as well. Maybe not as effective, and they come kicking and screaming. But if we can detox that individual, get them in a more clear-headed state, we can start to talk and communicate and point out the discrepancies when they say they don't have a problem. We can go back in their history a little bit and say, yeah, let's talk about this. So it's more difficult, but the whole tough love thing works. There's got to be some consequence for the person that suffers with addiction to finally see the light. It can't just go on as if nothing is wrong. Consequences create action.
And, you know, Josh, in the veteran community, I think of one veteran in particular who's done so much to help others. Let's just say his first name is Kirby. And he explained to me once how he fell into addiction and mental health. He had had PTSD from service, and he had guilt from service. He's in the special operative community. His problem, Josh, was more, speaking of drugs, once he had done his time in Afghanistan and Iraq, a lot of times these special operators contract. So he was going to South America, for example, to take out drug labs and working with the CIA. This is, I can talk about this, but because he told me, and he's a man of his word. And a lot of times their intel was okay, but not perfect. So whatever target they were taking out, bad guy might have been there, but so was family. Family was supposed to be at church or doing shopping, and they took out the house, blew it up. He said that's a hard thing to live with. And so what happened is he comes back to New Hampshire, gets out of the military, starts having that guilt, like one of our other callers. So he'd self-medicate at night with a bottle, and then it turned into a pill. And then he'd go to the VA or somewhere, and they gave him behavioral stuff. And he put it all together. He said it was a deadly cocktail. One day, he was in his basement one night, literally hit the bottom, fell down the stairs at the bottom, had a gun in his mouth, and a local police were called by his wife, as he said they should have. And I believe he actually might have pointed the gun at the officer, wanting him to take his own life for him. And the officer had been a veteran, had training, and was amazingly handled this local law enforcement, handled this amazing, quieted down the situation, took Kirby into protective custody. And they had, of course, he had to go to jail for a little bit, was bailed out by a care coordinator for a veterans count group that I support, and got on his path to sobriety and clarity. And he talks about how close he came, but how addiction from the mental health trigger of PTSD took over his life. Addiction was ruining everything, his job, his career, his business, and his loved ones. And today, you know, he struggles with it still, but he said, thank God, because he would have stayed in that basement and would have been a funeral.
Yeah, what you're talking about is what we alluded to earlier, and that's your mental health, mental illness, and the connection to addiction. I mean, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, somebody's been in Afghanistan, and there's, you know, I mean, war is hell. You're going to have a memory that it's painful to think about. So, would you know, some people choose to self-medicate. That feels better for the time being. Let me do it again. But it could be that. It could be divorce. It could be a number of different things. Dropping out of college. Who knows? Something that's bothering you. Well, what makes me feel better for the short term?
Yeah.
Well, maybe a pill or a drink does. But then that starts the cycle, right, Eric?
Yeah. I mean, the addiction brings you to your knees, right? Yeah. And you do so much good work for our veterans in the state, Jack. I like to think we do as well. We have our own veterans program up at Granite Recovery Centers. It's located at Green Mountain Treatment Center in Effingham, New Hampshire. It's called the Patriots Program. So we bring our veterans in, and pretty much half their day. Jim Gamash will talk about this. He's our clinical director for all our programs. But we focus in, and it's more trauma-informed care. We have three veteran clinicians that run that program. Mm. So they come in. We try to keep them as long as we can, as long as the VA will allow them to stay. It's really good program. And I was up there yesterday. I met with the veterans in their group, and they love the camaraderie, talking to their fellow vets, and they have a bond that's unbreakable.
So the treatment's really not one size fits all.
And hold that thought, because right? We have Jasmine coming on, Josh and Eric. And Eric, who's Jasmine?
Jasmine LaMontagne is executive director of New Freedom Academy, which is in Salem. I've known Jasmine for a number of years. I don't know of anybody that has committed themselves to the state of addiction more than this woman.
All right. You listen to our special three-hour Good Morning New Hampshire live right now on our network of news talk stations, The Pulse of NH, the state of addiction. It needs to be talked about. Back with Jasmine and more. A lot of feedback, a lot of inquiries. A lot of listener comments. Thank you so much. The state of addiction, Eric Ekberg. I want you to introduce Jasmine and take it away.
Thanks, Jack. My pleasure. Jasmine LaMontagne, executive director of New Freedom Academy in Salem. I've known Jasmine for a number of years, and I quite honestly don't know anybody who is committed to helping people that are trying to find help for their addiction. She'll go to the ends of the earth to be there. Thanks for jumping on, Jazz.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. How are you guys doing?
Jasmine, we're doing okay. Tell us a little bit about your story, your center. Eric gives you high praise for your passion and your commitment. Take it away, Jasmine. We need to get to know you better.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a person in recovery. I found my way to Granite Recovery Centers November of 2016. I was scholarshiped. I was honored and blessed to be a scholarship because I had been homeless coming before that. And so I went to detox. My scholarship carried through residential programming and then through PHP, IOP. PHP is partial hospitalization. IOP is intensive outpatient, where I began managing a sober house and very quickly just kind of realized like my calling and my purpose to work in the industry. And I've just been here ever since.
What's the website? People can learn more about you. And also, Eric, we need to give out your information more. What's your website, Jasmine?
Oh, yeah. So for Granite Recovery Centers, our website is graniterecoverycenters.com. And you can learn everything about us on there from, you know, how to contact admissions, where our locations are, what our programs, the different programs that we have to offer. We use a lot of evidence-based practices. You can learn about all the different treatment modalities that we offer here. So you can find a lot of information about our mission statement, our vision statement. We're a very mission-driven organization, so you can learn about that as well there.
And can you, and Eric, I'm going to let you take this away, but Jasmine, can you share a little more about your story? Because you said you're in recovery, your own story. How did you get on the path to addiction or of addiction?
Yeah, so it's really hard to say how I got there. So growing up in my family environment, I was definitely predisposed to alcoholism and drug addiction. My entire family, from myself extended all the way out, struggled with substance use disorder. Growing up, I think trauma definitely played a significant factor into how I was able to deal with life. So I went through a lot of trauma growing up and then just never had any stability. So I bounced around a lot throughout my life. And then as soon as I found alcohol and drugs, I realized, you know, that they did something for me that I didn't have without them. And that was that they made me feel okay, you know. I'd never felt comfortable in my own skin. I was very socially awkward. I'd have, like, crippling anxiety, racing thoughts. My thoughts would tell me I'm not good enough, you don't have anything to share. And I could be in a room with hundreds of people, and I would be so isolated and alone and miserable. And I found alcohol and drugs at a very early age. You know, I was predisposed to it. Growing up, it wasn't something that was frowned upon for me and my family. And so by the time I had hit high school, I was a full-blown drug addict, and drugs took that all away from me. I felt like I could be comfortable in my own skin. I felt like I had a little bit of confidence, but it was only, you know, when I was under the influence of a substance. It wasn't true to my nature. And that just kind of spiraled for myself for a very long time. I didn't get sober until the age of 32. And so what that looked like for me was like a lot of treatment episodes. A part of my story is that I had been in and out of jail. So I'm really dedicated now to, you know, helping individuals that are, you know, stuck in that vicious cycle thinking that they can't get out of it, because I'm literally living proof that you can get out of it. You can get out of any vicious cycle that you're trapped in and any story that you tell yourself. And so what it looked like for me in 2015, my drug addiction had taken me to like an all new low, like, you know, like basically every yet that I hadn't done, I had done. And so, I had experienced homelessness, you know, for a significant period of time. And I had never experienced homelessness before. You know, my family was done with me, rightfully so. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any positive supports in my life. I had burnt every single bridge. And I had no idea why, you know, to be stuck in that vicious cycle and not understand what's wrong with you and the story that you tell yourself, or the story that I told myself over and over and over, is, well, it's because I'm not good enough. It's because I can't do this. I was really just stuck in like this very limited belief system. And I felt that, like, I felt that to the very fiber of my core, you know, that I couldn't do anything other than this. And it was trapped, and it was just, you know, it was dark and it was horrible. So in 2015, I was homeless. I was squatting in an abandoned house, which I had done for, you know, quite some time. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have running water. You know, it was a really terrible way to live, truthfully. And my self-hatred just grew and grew, and I couldn't figure out, like, what was wrong with me. And, you know, I had been to treatment multiple times before, but still really couldn't understand, couldn't grasp it. And, you know, other than divine intervention, it's just kind of the only way I know how to explain it. Squatting in that abandoned house, you know, I had no desire left to live anymore. And my whole, like, experience of life up until that point had been pretty miserable, truthfully, unless I had gotten, you know, pretty inebriated, was the only thing that just kind of ever took the pain and suffering away. And, you know, through a series of individuals that I had met along the way, I got granted a scholarship up at Green Mountain Treatment Center for detox. When I went up there, I was in a meth-induced psychosis. I'm also a heroin addict, so, you know, I was not in good shape when I got up there after being homeless for a long period of time, not taking care of myself, not showering, not eating. I couldn't even look people in the eyes. I was so broken, just so broken. And I got up there, and I didn't feel worthy or, you know, valuable enough for that, but something inside of me went, and it wasn't me, and I was treated with kindness. I was treated with love. You know, people were gentle with me, and I had never experienced that before. Mm. And, you know, when I was in detox, they said, it's okay. Like, you don't have to worry. Like, you're going to go to residential. And I was homeless at the time, so I was like, okay, well, you know, I definitely don't want to go back to where I was, so I'll go to residential. And I just fell in love with the experience. I fell in love with the people. I had never in my life felt, like, connected to other humans. I just always felt so alone and so empty. And, like, my soul really just, like, sparked up there in Green Mountain. And, you know, why it happened that time and not other times in treatment, I'm not sure. I'd never been to Granite Recovery Centers before. This is my first experience with Granite Recovery Centers. But I will tell you that there's something very magical on the mountain, and it just really brought my soul to life up there. And you know, I was building genuine connections. I was accepting a lot of really hard truths about myself. I think for myself as like a human being, like when you see someone suffering or you see someone in pain, like I naturally just want to like rescue them out of that. But, you know, while I was in treatment, like I had to have those experiences. Like
right.
I had to face these truths about myself that I had been denying forever if I did not want to go back to living the way that I was. And at times that was painful, you know. But I just kept pushing through, and whatever I was told to do, I did, even if I didn't like it, because I was so scared to mm-hmm. go back to the way I had been living. And finally, for the first time in my life, like, I was feeling relief. Like, literally, the world was getting brighter. Like, I had never experienced
right.
the world a bright place.
Jasmine, I hate to do this, but we have to sneak in a quick break. If you can stay with us, our State of Addiction.
Yeah,
Eric,
of course.
I think, Jasmine, you just did the entire three-hour special in that 10 or 12 minutes sharing your story. I think you hit upon every possible human base that I would hope to accomplish these 3 hours. And I thank you for the courage and humility and strength to share your story, you know, from low to medium to high in terms of what you've been able to do since. So please hold the thought. Thank you for being so honest and passionate about this. We're going to come back in a moment. This is our State of Addiction Good Morning New Hampshire special, focusing, just chose to do this today. We planned it for a while because we need to talk about this. Really, of all the healthcare things in our lives, number one cause of death of people 18 to 44 in the United States of America is not COVID. It's not another virus. It's not heart disease. It's not car accident. It's not stroke. It's a drug overdose. The State of Addiction, back on Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of an H. Back in a moment. Eric Eckberg, Granite Recovery Centers and Resources. Jasmine's still with us for a few moments. Eric, I'm going to let you kind of react to what Jasmine shared. Her story, her personal and now professional story, really says volumes.
It's an amazing story. Jasmine's an amazing woman. I didn't know her back then, prior to treatment, and I only know her the last couple of years, few years. And you wouldn't know. She's just the most outgoing, vibrant, energetic person, quite frankly, that's attached to recovery that I know. So her story's amazing. More importantly, what she does every day is amazing. She's helped and touched so many people. So entirely grateful that she's one of our employees and running one of our terrific programs right in Salem. Mm.
Jasmine, what's your message to someone who might be struggling and just not even think that they have an issue, or a loved one who's struggling and they're afraid to make that first touch to someone like you or your facilities?
Oh, just do it. You don't even like have to want to do it, even if you're unsure. If you don't think that you can do it, that's okay. You know, all it just takes is a little bit of willingness, and you don't even have to believe that it can happen for you. With that little bit of willingness, more doors will open up for you.
Mm. I would add, Jack, you know, Jazz was fortunate to find her way up at Green Mountain Treatment Centers, and she talks about not wanting to do certain things that were asked about her. And it's hard work. You know, I talk to a lot of people. We're up in Effingham. It's a great view, great spot, but it's not a vacation. You know, we're going up there. There's a lot of clinical work. There's a lot of self-reflection, et cetera. That being said, we do want people to go, and along the way, they make connections. We do have fun. We do have events to keep people engaged. You know, we had a recovery concert a couple of weeks ago. We do things on a regular basis to bring the community together. We've got a comedy show coming in on Saturday. So we want people to have fun because, you know, we want people to be sober, in recovery, and enjoy life. Part of our theme up there is enjoy life again.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have those events along with the hard work.
Jasmine, when you talked your story in the last segment about being squatting in that home, the house, you know, where you were living, and just not even seeing a light, when you mentioned the mountain, when you got to that mountain and you saw a light, is it a light you ever thought you would see again or ever?
It's a light I had never experienced, but honestly, it's a light that I have most days in my life now.
Wow. And at the height of this, what were you addicted to? Not that it, you know, there's a lot of different things, but I'm just curious. Addiction's addiction, but what were you addicted to? What did you take and think nothing of?
Everything, but heroin. I'm a heroin addict. And then also towards the end, my addiction got really bad with crystal meth as well.
Hmm. And did it matter? I mean, did you just feel when you were chasing addiction that it didn't matter what you put into your body?
I just didn't want to feel the way I felt, and I would do anything to alter the way that I felt.
Hmm. Is that common, Eric?
That's it. That's the whole thing, is to get out of yourself. You don't want to feel unwanted, abnormal, uncomfortable. You don't want to deal with sort of the regular everyday stressors, and it's a way to escape. Unfortunately, you know, we've hit the theme a few times. It progresses. It just gets worse. And then all the dangers involved with these crazy drugs that are on the market now. We talked a lot about fentanyl. There'll be new ones. I mentioned to you yesterday, there's this new thing out there, Xylanzin. They're finding it now mixed in with heroin. It's an animal tranquilizer, horse tranquilizer. Mm-hmm. What's really scary about it, Narcan doesn't work on it.
Wow, that is scary. Jasmine, did you ever think that you would feel again as healthy as you do spiritually and physically now, given your background?
No, I didn't even know it was possible. There's a saying in some self-help groups, a life second to none, and that's so cliche, but I'm telling you, I live a life second to none. I did not even know that you could be this happy, passionate, driven. Like, I have so much purpose in my life today, and, you know, Eric had said, like, I'm always vibrant. Like, I really, truly, I have so much life and energy that's just, I bebop around everywhere I go all the time.
Mm. And I sense, obviously...
And I never experienced that before, ever.
Yeah, and I sense, obviously, an appreciation in there that you have this opportunity now to help others.
It's literally what I live my life for.
Can I ask a strange question? One quick question that's bugging me that I'm going to ask you both before we take a break, and we'll bring in Jasmine, our next guest. It really goes to Jasmine and Eric. You know, one thing that drives me bonkers, a few things do. I feel a little bit of Jasmine when she talks. I don't have the time I want left sometimes. I have the energy. There's so many things I want to do, and now I'm driven and fueled by helping, and I channel a lot of it into the veterans advocacy side. But you know what makes me a little bonkers when Jasmine talks, and she mentioned the mountain, and Eric? Does faith matter to you now? Was faith instrumental at all into believing into something greater than yourself? Because in our society today, things are so politicized, people are afraid to even bring up faith. And that is so asinine to me. I don't think I could live my purpose, my existence, physically and spiritually, if I didn't believe in something bigger and better and stronger than myself. I feel sometimes like I'm a little speck of sand on a beach. Eric, you're nodding. Jasmine, did faith matter at all here?
When I got sober, did faith matter? No, because I didn't understand it. Does faith matter today? Absolutely. You know, I live my life on faith. I live my life on trust. I give gratitude every single morning to God. I am grateful for the life that I am abundantly blessed with. And I literally just ask God to use me and guide me every single day because I am God's vessel to bring me to wherever he needs to bring me.
Well, how can that be offensive to anyone? Eric, you're nodding.
Thanks for bringing that up, Jack. You know, we're almost afraid to talk about it, right? It's amazing. A lot of what we do up in Granite Recoveries is part of the 12 Steps Fellowship, AA and NA, and a big part of that is a spiritual awakening. And it's not for everybody, but the majority of people...
Yeah, but you know what? I got to tell you, you look at what works, and I'm going to tell you, I can see a lot of dozen, but I'll leave you with this, Jasmine and Eric. I got a buddy named Tony. I love him. He's done more deployments in the special operative world than I can count. He still trains our special forces when they come out and before they become, you know, go up in his Green Berets, Delta Teams, Navy SEALs, PJs. You know what he's, if I'm out with him in Portsmouth and we're just having a cold beer and something to eat, he puts his head down and he gives a, you know, just counts his blessings, like puts his head down before he eats. And I go, are you praying? And he goes, damn right I am. And he's not. And I said to him, I said, in a respectful way, I said, Tony, that's really cool. He goes, Jack, you think I wouldn't be here. I shouldn't even be here. I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in something bigger than myself and the stuff I've been through. All right, Jasmine, God bless. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing your purpose now and your journey. We'll catch you real soon. Thank you, Jasmine, for really making our 3 hours a lot extra. Thank you, Jasmine.
Yeah, bye, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, take a break.
Thanks, Jazz.
Eric, when you come back, Governor Chris Sununu on deck talking about the state of addiction and more on Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. You know, sometimes you do these ideas, you put it in reality, Eric. And John Delana joining us again from New York in a little bit with the DEA. 36 million deadly doses of fentanyl taken off the street in the last year. And that's only what they know about. And Eric, the story of Jasmine and her, the lows of addiction and living in that, squatting in that house to the point of what she's doing now. Unbelievable stuff. The state of addiction. Governor Chris Sununu joining us, GMI Studios, as we do these, really focusing 3 hours on this. Governor, thanks for weighing in on why this matters.
You bet. Good morning, Jack.
Well, again, Josh McKelvin, you made a great point earlier with Governor Sununu that prior to COVID, the surveys, UNH, saying all the surveys were saying addiction. Addiction, number one problem in the state. And then, of course, it takes a back burner, but it never went away. And we battle this all the time, and we're trying to raise awareness. I mean, no disrespect to COVID and monkeypox and all these other viruses that we spend so much time and focus. More listeners, more families deal with some degree of addiction and or mental health and or both than I can think of. So, Governor, just your thoughts on progress we've made, challenges still to go, and just how serious this is.
Sure. Well, look, I mean, back 2016, 2017, it was an unfettered crisis. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We inherited a completely ass-backward system where we put some money into some nonprofits here and there, but there was no coordination. There was no centralization. There was everyone just fighting for their little piece of the financial pie. We broke all that down, and we created the doorway system. And basically, the doorway provides one at its most fundamental aspect. It provides a rural access to care, right? Not just all the nonprofits in downtown Manchester or downtown Nashua. And so the rural access to care is so critical. We have 220 cities and towns in the state. And we found early on that the addiction rate in Coos County, Grafton County, was 4 times that of Manchester. Think about that. The addiction rate in Coos was 4 times greater than it was even in downtown Manchester. And the reason was that access to care. And not just, I mean, when I became governor, it was like, we have a 28-day program here and a 28-day program. 28, what is, Jack, what is 28 days? It's this arbitrary number. It's nonsense. It has nothing to do with fentanyl and opioids. So, again, we've tried to recreate how we do treatment, the treatment options available, their onset of recovery, that sometimes it's not a few weeks of recovery, but it has to be sometimes a lifetime of recovery. We invented recovery-friendly workplaces. So do we still have a problem in this state? Absolutely. Absolutely. Are we, you know, number two in the country for overdose deaths? No, not anymore. We're average. We're like 25th or something in the country. But we still lost over 400 people last year. We're probably going to lose over 400 again this year. And those are families that have been absolutely devastated by this. So this is a national crisis that's just getting worse, right? We see the numbers skyrocketing nationally, even worse than I think it's like 60-70% in the last 4 years in overdose deaths. And having a non-secure southern border is an absolute disaster. John Delina, let me tell you something, man. You've heard me say before, if we didn't have John Delina in the position that he is in regionally for the entire Northeast, we would be in a much tougher position. Yeah. That guy has brought a New Hampshire perspective to all of New England. He's been awesome, and he's a huge DEA, work with state police, work with local law enforcement, and then local law enforcement works with the recovery programs and the treatment programs. It's a fully integrated system, an integrated approach that we're trying to take. And we are getting some results, no doubt about that. But this is the challenge that we're going to have to deal with. At least we have a system now to deal with it. But the unfettered flow of opioids into this, I call it a cartel. I think Delina actually gave me this line. You can ask him. It's a cartel-driven market. I think that's his line.
Well, he cited this morning, Governor, very clearly, there's two now cartels, he said, that are driving all the fentanyl in. Eric, real quickly, with the governor on, just maybe you can just real comment.
Yeah, and I appreciate everything Governor Sununu has done. We work with the Doorways. It's a great program to first step to get people someplace safe, and then they funnel those folks in our direction, and we get them in treatment. So that system's work. We need to do more. I met with the Governor Sununu a month or two ago, and you know, one of my asks was we need to do more. How do we make that happen?
Mm. Governor, thanks for the time on this morning. I appreciate it. We should not deal with a hurricane, but thank you very much. The state of addiction. Thank you, Governor.
You bet. Thank you.
Josh McKelvin, a thought before we go to the top of the hour.
Well, I just think the more doorways that we can create to get people into treatment, the better, because it works. But you hear stories like Jasmine and even the CEO sitting here. Everybody's got a life story. It's something that motivates them. But it's... Go ahead, Jack.
But Josh, before we get him into doorways of recovery,
yep,
we need to talk about it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, that's exactly the
that's
point.
What we're doing yep. today. You've been a part of this show. I mentioned it to you a while ago, mentioned it to Eric. You loved it. You said, let's do it. We're trying to wake the state up. We're trying to wake the region up. Not enough people are talking about this.
And there's media fatigue with issues, isn't there, Jack? You know that. I mean, they cover a story several times over the course of several months, and they want to move on to something else. But
unless Jasmine's your daughter, or she's your friend, Eric, or one of your folks, or your nephew, or your kid, or your spouse, or you, unless you're there, you know, it's like the old, fire hitting your house or car. You know, until something lands in your lap, it doesn't exist, right, Eric?
Yes. And I think that's the dilemma, right? If it isn't happening to you, you kind of shoo it away. Oh, that's not going to happen to me, not my kid, not this or that.
All right.
But we've got to get that education. We've got to let parents know what the warning signs are.
And we're going to go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, educate them.
Right.
Keep that going, too. The drumbeat can't stop.
We're going to come back with that. We're going to continue our state of addiction. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of Nation.